This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Thanks for taking the time to download this BBC Radio 5 Live podcast. To search for other podcasts you might like, click bbc.co.uk/5live,
where you'll also find our terms of use.
Though the majority of web citizens appeared to be in Austin, Texas this last weekend, there is still plenty going on outside of South by Southwest, which must mean that Jamila's back with another selection of electronic things known as Outriders. Jamila, what's looking good to you this week?
Hello, Rod. This week I've been finding out about games designed by an artificial intelligence, a world of Qt that is just about to cross over from the virtual space, and what pros use to do what they do.
That sounds good. Let's get going, Jamila. Now, games designers, I think, work pretty hard to hone their skills in gameplay and graphics and game theory and so much more in order to create something that's engaging and that will sell. But are there parts of the process that could be handed over to a different intelligence? Oh, dear.
I know. Just to assure everyone, we're not actually calling the end of jobs for games makers. Yeah. But some very interesting work in game design has come from recent artificial intelligence research by Michael Cook. Now, he's a PhD student at the Computational Creativity Group at Imperial College London, and he makes software that designs video games. Now, he's rather modest too, but don't believe that because it's pretty impressive work. So I had to ask him, who or what is Angelina?
Angelina really is just a bit of code. It's a little computer program that runs and does rather exciting or interesting things. But it's not sitting in a robot somewhere stomping around my office or anything like that. It's a really interesting piece of software. We use something called computational evolution, which is an artificial intelligence technique. So it's really useful. You can use it to create all kinds of stuff. It's used in engineering and medicine. And here we've applied it to make video games.
And so how does that work when it comes to video games themselves? Because maybe you would expect there'd be certain restrictions when it comes to outlining a game in the traditional way.
Yeah, the way Angelina uses evolution is quite interesting. The reason we picked this technique initially was because I felt there was kind of a metaphor with how game designers develop games in the real world. So Angelina's split into several different parts. One part will design the levels, another part might design the enemies you're going to face, another part might design power-ups you're going to have. And it was this idea that these different parts would collaborate and communicate with each other and almost share ideas. That's not really how it works in the code, but there's a feeling that that's the kind of metaphor we were aiming for overall. So computational evolution, the technique that Angelina's built on, is named after evolution in the natural world. And in the natural world, evolution is sort of the process by which species or animals which have bad traits die off over time, and the ones that have good traits or good features get to reproduce and send those traits down to the next generation of children. And Angelina basically uses exactly that technique, more or less, to design games instead of complex organisms. So good games are retained by Angelina. She identifies good games and keeps them. The bad games are thrown away, and then the good games reproduce with each other, kind of. They create child games that have the properties and the features of their parents, and they get sort of sent on to the next generation, which Angelina then goes on and plays and evaluates again. So it's sort of like a cycle of reproducing games.
How does Angelina decide what's a good game?
So what makes a game fun is a really difficult question, and that is probably the central question to our research. It's one of the ones that we have to tackle most at our conferences and that we talk with other researchers about. Because what makes a game fun for me might not make a game fun for you or anyone else. That's one of the reasons why we stuck to very basic, simple games at the moment. So, for instance, with the platformers, we've said that a good game is one where you have to use lots of power-ups to get to the exit, and obviously one that isn't frustrating and doesn't kill you immediately. But, of course, that doesn't really go deep into why we like to play games. There's lots of different theories about why games are fun, and I might really like a game that's about making difficult moral decisions, whereas you might like a game that's all about solving puzzles. Mm. So for the future, a lot of our research is going to be asking these questions about why do we play games and trying to get Angelina to either help tell us or use what we think to generate games herself.
If Angelina can then develop in an evolutionary manner, does that mean that she can be left to come to natural or slightly more unnatural conclusions and indeed come up with something that you might not have thought of as fun at all, something you haven't seen?
Sort of. If you think about how evolution works in nature, evolution's got to choose from a very small set of gene sequences, if you want. So if I have a child tomorrow, my child probably isn't going to have wings on its back, because that just could not happen.
More's the pity.
Well, absolutely, yes. Or at least I hope they wouldn't. So with Angelina, I tell Angelina, for starters, I tell it that it's making a platform game, and I tell it that the player character is going to be able to throw things at the enemy. So I already restrict the number of decisions that Angelina can make quite a lot. One of the reasons for that is that if I gave Angelina too many choices, if I said, make any type of game you want, it doesn't have to be a platform game, Angelina would get lost very quickly. That's partly because defining what makes a game fun is even harder when you don't know what kind of game you're making. So one of the next stages in our research is to give Angelina more choices and more options. And there what we're hoping is, as you say, if we left Angelina running for long enough, she wouldn't just come up with a good example of a game that we've seen before, but she might come up with a game that we've never seen before, an idea that would actually be novel and new, rather than another platform game.
And just looking at the idea of evolutionary code, to be honest, it looks like a fantastic tool if you were making a virus.
You mean a computer virus?
Yeah.
Yes, and I think, I'm no security expert, but I think that has been used in the past on some viruses. The thing with evolutionary processes is that once you understand what they use as what we call their fitness function, so for instance, if I tell Angelina to choose games which are long, which take a long time to finish, we call that the fitness function of the evolutionary process. Once you've figured out a lot of the underlying fitness functions and the things that stay the same in an evolutionary process, it's often much easier to understand the system. So although you could have maybe a computer virus that evolved its behavior as it went on, I think once it was understood the way in which it was evolving, once its code had been examined, I think ultimately people would be able to make countermeasures. But evolution is a fascinating tool, and it really does apply to all manner of problems. One quote that I was told by a researcher, which I really like, is that it's rarely the best solution to a problem, but it almost always solves the problem eventually.
And do you think then that our expectations of AI are that it would emulate human intelligence where it exists? Certainly not with me on a bad day, but yeah.
Yes, and I think part of the problem is people like me who enjoy talking about Angelina in a kind of anthropomorphic way, which is hugely unhelpful. And that's part of the fun of working with artificial intelligence. And I think people do expect one day that they will meet computers which are as intelligent or more intelligent as they are. And perhaps they will. It's feasible if we had a complex enough computer. But a lot of the time you can get by with a good illusion, a good feeling or a good pretend intelligence, as it were. So Angelina doesn't really understand how to enjoy a video game or how to play one. But it does look like she does, and that counts for a lot. I enjoy the games more because I have this feeling of an intelligent system having designed them. So when each game pops out of Angelina and I go to see how well she's understanding the system right now, it's a bit more enjoyable because it wasn't just a random algorithm that popped it out. It feels like there is a personality behind it. One of the funny things that's come out of the coverage of Angelina over the past couple of days has been lots of people referring to the Terminator movies or Skynet, where an AI tries to take over part of the world. Mm. What I think over the next 20 years we're going to see is that, although that's still a lot of fun to joke about, I think people are going to find artificial intelligence to be friendlier and more helpful than ever before. And I think the relationship we have with computers and technology is going to get better and better. And I don't know whether Angelina's part of that or not. I like to think it is. I like to think that people will get home after a long day at work and Angelina will have just the right game for them waiting at home.
Where can we find out more or indeed see examples of, I'd like to say Angelina's work, but it's probably more technically your work.
I like to think of it as a bit of both. I'm really keen on getting absolutely everyone to tell me what they think about Angelina. So I've got a website that I update with my research and progress updates. That's gamesbyangelina.org. And on there, there's a link where you can play some of the arcade games Angelina made and also some of the platformers. And I'll also be posting up there information about games I make in the future and where Angelina's going next.
And of course, finally, we have to ask, why has she been named Angelina?
You know, I think you're the first interviewer who's actually asked me that. I have a real thing for very bad acronyms. So Angelina is an acronym, and it stands for a novel game-evolving lab rat I've named Angelina. In computing, we call it a recursive acronym because the last letter is the acronym again, and it's basically just a way for us to wind each other up.
I think I'd find Angelina helpful in finding mobile games too, or maybe that would be one of her sisters.
I think I'd need to ask Angelina a few simple questions before we got down to all the hard stuff. But now, here's a tip of the hat to our friend Wagner James Au and his wonderful New World Notes website for a tale of cute overload spilling out from the virtual world into the real one.
Yes, a tiny creature takeover is about to happen as the animals of Ragland Shire are heading over from their usual habitat and into our everyday lives. Now, don't adjust your set. We haven't become book at bedtime, but there are stories to be told, and a couple of extraordinary and creative people who are used to making wonderful things in the virtual space are now working on creating something for everyone. So I'll let them introduce themselves.
My pseudonym is Winx Whiplash, and that's the name I go by in Second Life. I design avatars there, but in the real world, I am crossing over into making actual 3D, well, we'll say puppets. I mean, you know, to do a 3D children's program production.
Well, Zane's my pseudonym, and I've actually been going by it now for several years. I'm so used to it that if I use my regular name, which is Michael, I don't respond well to it anymore because I don't recognize it. So it's kind of strange. I'm a former musician. I worked in 12 years in IT as a corporate slave. And we had created this Ragland Shire and Tinies concept in the virtual world. And we thought it might be a great thing to do and pursue in the real world. So that's where we're at right now.
Ragland Shire. What is that and where is it, more to the point?
Ragland Shire is a whimsical world of cute animals living in a place of different and varying locales, grassy forests and woodlands and tree cities and giant, ginormous trees and these cute little animals. And it doesn't exist anywhere but our minds and in the virtual world, one of them being Second Life, another one being a virtual world called InWorlds. These are places that are free for people to log into, and they're basically 3D canvases, kind of like you would see in a video game, except everything you see is created by the users.
And,
like Winx, who created the avatars that are the Tinies, and your personification when you see yourself on screen as you're interacting, you can choose to be anything you want. This is one of the things that you can be as a Tiny, and what we've based the whole thing on is these tiny animals because they're just so adorable.
And so, Winx, how did you come up with a design for Tinies, and which animals did you choose?
Well, believe it or not, I had a dream. Seriously, I fell asleep one night. I had a dream that I was standing on my virtual land in Second Life, and I was surrounded by all these little animals in clothes, and they were all yelling, "We love you!" And I was like struck by it. I mean, I woke up and I was completely polarized. I couldn't think of anything else I wanted to do. I went through my normal work day just thinking, how am I going to get this done? How am I going to get this done? And I spoke to a man named Cage Seraph. I don't know his real name, but in Second Life, that is his name. And he had made a very small robot. It was so small. It was like knee high to a normal avatar. And he had said that he would be willing to license his idea and his animations on how to make that happen. So I contacted him, and it took him about 3 weeks to get back to me. But when he did, I was ready, and I made, I started out with the first one was a little brown bunny who looks quite a lot like the main character in our little television production we're trying to put together. His name is Tavi, but apparently that was Zane's favorite too, because he is also the same brown bunny. Right after that, I also released a gray squirrel and then a panda. And these were the first three, and I just set them out. I did a small advertisement on the game forums, and bam, the next day, everybody was running around in these things. And the whole week later, I mean, the grid just was
in
got
the virtual
shrunk.
World, so.
Yeah. In Second Life, everybody shrunk down to nothing running around these little animals. And I was kind of depressed when I first made them. I was like, well, I can't make clothes for them, and they can't, because they're so small, and I can't figure out how to. Everybody else did it. I mean, they made the animations to make them do all sorts of things because they need special animations. They made all the special clothing. They made vehicles for them, housing, and it was just amazing. And it just took off and had like a life of its own. I just sat back and watched.
The characters kind of remind me of something that you might see, say, in a Beatrix Potter story. So
yes.
Something
yeah.
that we might be familiar with already. Why did it take so long? I mean, it's sort of something that we're all so familiar with, and you've certainly struck on exactly the right idea that people would enjoy.
Yeah. You know, I don't think we're the first to think about cute little animals in any type of production, whether it's fiction or a cartoon show or film or whatnot. But we have a pretty unique view on what we're doing. And a lot of it's based on we might have created this, but a lot of it comes from the essence of what we did with our community. Also, you know, you asked us about where it is. We had named the place Raglan Shire years ago. But what we didn't know is that there's actually Raglan Shires around the world. There's one in New Zealand and there's one in Canada. So we kind of found out after the fact as we went on it, there was actually like real-life tie-ins.
It appears that they are transcending the digital world already. I understand that you're hoping to turn this into something that will be more mainstream, more accessible to people who might not yet be a part of the 3D world.
Virtual worlds are great, and you know, we encourage folks to log on and have a look for themselves. But honestly,
we owe a lot to it.
We owe a lot to it, but really nobody knows much, you know, about them. And what we're doing is just so neat and cute and adorable. And it reaches more than just pure entertainment. What we're trying to do is basically entertain and make people smile, but also do more than just do this to monetize it. I mean, monetizing is great now, and I guess that's what everyone wants to do. But and we do want to keep a roof over our heads and clothes on our back and food on our tables. But we really would like to use this to entertain as well as do some good in the real world by doing some of the things that we've done virtually with our community, which is to encourage people to come together and collaborate and be creative together and learn new skills. And we have arts and music aspirations in terms of things we'd like to do to help folks, as well as, you know, we've lost some friends that are part of our community, and we've got some hopes to do some community type of organizations or whatnot.
Research to raise money for research for cures for diseases and whatnot. I mean, just basically we have a lot of hopes and dreams that we can make a real difference with what we have, what we've done, what we've put together.
Mm-hmm. It's not enough to collect a paycheck. It says that on our site. There's got to be more to making more money. We're not, Winks likes to say we're not breadheads, but it's true. This whole thing is basically something that can cross all demographics if we can do this right. And it's not just for kids, although I'm sure kids will love it. And my thing lately is, if children choose to fall in love with the show, well, you know, that's their fault, right?
And so what has it been like to try and design this or redesign this based on the Second Life characters and take it further?
Tough. Very tough. We wanted to be able to capture the spirit, but we wanted to go a step farther, too. I wanted them to have a little more detail. And, well, that's one thing about the Second Life creations is they don't have a lot of facial expressions. And in this one, we want them to have that. And I think that's pretty much the main differences visually.
Winx is like just an outrageously awesome artist and graphic artist. And this really allows her and the other folks that are helping her out on the Jazz Boss team to really flesh out the look of the characters in the world. I mean, virtual worlds are great, but they're limited. You've got to make them accessible to the general public, because that's what they're all about, is bringing people in to basically create as users the content that you experience when you're in these virtual worlds. And while everything is nice and beautiful looking and amazing, if you compare it to what you would see on television or in the movies, you just can't get as detailed. So now Winx and our other folks are able to really get detailed with the 3D modeling and the hand-drawn and the background environments. It's just so much nicer. I can't even look at the other stuff anymore because these are looking so cute and adorable and real almost.
Let me add to that a little bit more, that we have a few people from Second Life that have come and have volunteered and learned how to do this stuff and are working with us. We have people who have been painting and making 3D models and basically on a volunteer basis, simply because they believe in this so much. It's just been amazing to see people coming forward, helping with work and money, and it's been great so far.
Well, it is super cute, and I've managed to get this far without saying squee, because they're adorable. Where can we find out more? Even if we're not necessarily Second Lifers or used to a 3D world, where can we see these wonderful characters?
Jazzpaws.com.
www.jazzpaws.com.
Now, I've heard here on Outriders that many great projects and ideas are developed alongside people's day jobs or in their spare time. Our next guest is a web developer at Flickr, the photo sharing site. But as if that's not enough, he also runs a neat site where he asks people to describe what they use to do what they do. The setup is where all sorts of people describe their toolkit, and Daniel is the man who asks the questions. Well, except for now, where I get to ask them. So I started by asking him to describe the setup.
It is a website where I interview people with the same four questions, asking them basically what they use to get stuff done. So it could be anyone from any field. I'm not really trying to get just, you know, nerdy people, but that seems to be the way it tends to go at the moment. But yeah, so the same four questions for everyone.
And so what are the four questions, or is that like a secret ingredient?
Oh, no. So it's just I ask them who they are, what they do. I ask what hardware they use, what software, and what their dream setup would be. So they're nice and vague enough almost to kind of work for any field. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems to work best for computer stuff, but I've had coffee people. I'm trying to get more just random people, different fields like chefs and scientists. I'm not really trying to get any one particular type of person. Mm-hmm. So whoever I can get would be good.
What sparked your interest in doing this? I mean, I like reading it because I am impossibly nosy.
I've always been fascinated with like trying different types of software and stuff. So I guess that's where it came from originally. I'm always interested in what people use and like finding out other tools that people have. And I guess, yeah, I just kind of started with that and asked one of my friends to do an interview about it. This was before it had its own website even, and people seemed to like it, and then it just kind of spiraled from there.
And have there been any surprises then in the interviews you've done so far?
Not really surprises. I mean, I'm kind of very lucky with people I have managed to get, which is, it turns out if you're really persistent and annoying, people will eventually cave. So.
And has it affected your own setup then? Have you thought, actually, that's the idea I was looking for?
Yeah, that is one of the nice side effects of it, is that I get to find out all the stuff that I'd never heard of before. So I find out all the cool little tools that otherwise I probably would never have run across.
Can you share with us then anything about your own setup that we might take away?
I probably wouldn't want anyone to have my setup because I tend to use my computer lying on the floor. I wouldn't suggest other people follow it for ergonomical reasons, I guess.
That is unusual. So that's certainly a how not to, at least.
Yeah, that's definitely a how not to do it, yeah.
Certainly we can learn things from looking at your website. Do you find that jetting around the web, you're actually learning more helpful things than maybe you did in your formal education?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely one for self-taught. That's where my background is. I taught myself to write code and stuff. So the web is definitely an awesome place for doing that.
Excellent. All right, then. So if we'd like to come and have a look, where's best and how do we find you online?
So it's www.usersthis.com. One thing that's actually nice is not only do I go out and reach out to other people to interview, but I suggest that people do a self-interview. So the same four questions, they can host it on their own website and then I'll link to it. So if people are interested in doing that, then let me know.
Now, Daniel was dreadfully modest there in our interview, but if you pop by his site, you can nose around and see the setups of people including novelist Charlie Struss, Facebook CTO Brett Taylor, and original Macintosh developer Andy Hertzfeld, along with many other brilliant people. It's a simple idea, and it's beautifully executed.
But sadly, Jamila, we have come to the end of our time again.
Yes, I'm afraid it always passes far too quickly. But during the week, our digital doors are always open, of course. I'd especially like to hear from you this week if you're celebrating, or did celebrate by the time we get to it, Pi Day. That is, of course, the 14th of the 3rd, if you're a bit less nerdy than we are. You can drop me a line on most social networks, find us on Facebook and Google+ as Outriders, or come and say hello on Twitter, where we are BBC_Outriders.
On digital and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
bbc.co.uk/5live.